I've titled the sermon today, Strangers in the World. And the reason I picked this is because a little bit of the linking to what Steve talked about last Sunday, for those of you that can remember back that far. Steve was talking about how we should live as a church, how we should interact, how we should conduct ourselves. And in particular, one particular passage that Steve was looking at was, if you flick over the page, perhaps in your Bible, to 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 12, where Steve was looking last week at the verse where Peter says, "Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us." And Peter there is talking to the church, and that's how the church should conduct themselves. But I want to take us a step backwards, and we'll look at the foundation upon which the church comes together, which is basically the foundation of how we as individuals come into that saving knowledge of Christ, and therefore come together as a body of people to form the church. So we're linking to what Steve was talking about last week, but we're applying it more particularly in our own lives. And so this passage in 1 Peter chapter 1, starting verse 13, has many different images that talk about how we have been, how we are now, and also where we might be going in the future. And we're going to unpack some of those images over the next few minutes, as I said, giving us that foundation for church. So, why have I called it strange in the world? Why does Paul refer to us being strangers? Why does Peter refer to us being strangers in this world? And what is it that perhaps makes us strangers, is the first question that came to my mind. Because as I look around us, sometimes we just look at the world and think, well, it's not so strange. And we might not think of ourselves as too strange in the world as well. Sometimes we may well think that, but often we try and go about our business, don't we? We try to fit in. That's our natural inclination. And the world doesn't necessarily seem strange to us because we have grown up with the world. And therefore, to be strangers in the world is, on one level, quite a strange phrase. But Peter, when he looks at the world, when he picks up on some of these images, has a number of things which he says about the world, and some of the characteristics of it are listed there that he picks up on. So if you look on to the start of chapter 2, Peter says that the world, and therefore us in the world before we became Christians, was full of malice, deceit, hypocrisy, envy, slander of all kinds. Not exactly characteristics that we necessarily want to have applied to ourselves, but as we look around the world around us, as we look to ourselves perhaps in terms of what we might have naturally in our hearts, we might, if we're honest, see some of those different aspects or different characteristics of the world, and we may not want to be having those characteristics applied to us. And that's one of the reasons why Peter talks about the fact that we should be strangers in the world. He also talks in verse 14 about the fact that we are ignorant, or the world around us is ignorant. And again, in terms of ignorance, what is really being driven out there is the fact that the world just doesn't know any different. And perhaps that's why we, as people in the world, just think of it as being quite normal and not necessarily strange, because we don't know any different if we don't have Christ. And that's very much what Peter is driving at here when he's talking about the fact that we are ignorant. We're in darkness, if you link back to some of the other phrases that are picked up in the Old Testament and the New Testament. The world is in darkness. We don't know the light, and therefore we go around stumbling. We go about our business not knowing that there is something far better. And it's in that sense that Peter talks about as being ignorant there in verse 14, not knowing the light that is coming, or the light that is available to us. And then in two instances in this passage, Peter talks about the fact that the world, in terms of its characteristic, is perishing. It's perishing. It's not eternal. It is temporary, as he goes on and talks about. And he picks up on two particular images as he talks to us about the fact that we shouldn't be relying on things that are perishing, things that are temporary in this world, things that are just transient. He talks about gold and silver and the fact that that's not going to save us in terms of what makes us who we are and in terms of where we're going in life, or particularly, as Peter comes on to, in the next life. Gold or silver and amassing that are not things that are going to save us. And in terms of what those gold and silver things might be, we'll all have different things in our lives that are precious to us. Things that we perhaps hold dear to us. It may be money in the sense of gold and silver being material wealth, but there will be different things in our lives that we hold to, which on the face of it we might not think are bad, but where we are looking to those things to save us, which is what Peter's driving at here, that's where the problems come, and that's where the world around us may seek to bring more and more things into our lives and to hold more and more things precious to us. But Peter says that's not what is ultimately going to save us. So we shouldn't be relying on perishable, precious things. And in the second reference to perishable things in verse 23, he says that we're not saved by perishable seed. Now, there are various images, aren't there, in the New Testament in particular, of the seed being sown. We think of some of the parables of Jesus where the seed was sown and it grew up in different states, some falling on the rocky ground, some falling amongst the thorns, and some falling on the good ground and growing up strong. But in almost all of those images in that parable, the seed was not destined to last, was it? It was perishable in that sense. And there are many different things that might be seeds in our lives. We often talk, don't we, about thinking and thoughts being seeds. And when Peter here is talking about the fact that seed is perishable in terms of the worldly thinking, he's reminding us that actually so often we can rely on different things happening in the world, different people sowing things to us, and that in that sense, if we rely on only those things, we're going to perish, because they are going to perish. And so Peter talks about very different characteristics of the world around us and the fact that that is one state of life. But we're not necessarily called to that state, or we're not called to that state of life. We're called to be different. And the reason ultimately is because the inheritance that comes, or the result that comes from relying on those characteristics, is what Peter says in verse 18, emptiness. He says, therefore, we know that it is not with perishable things such as silver or gold that we were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to us from our forefathers. He says it's empty. And that is the state of the world around us, and that is what Peter says we don't have to live in. That sense of emptiness. And if we think back several months to the sermon series that both Steve and also Dave talked to us about in Ecclesiastes, that was the theme running through that book, wasn't it? The fact that emptiness and the fact that life is meaningless is something which, when we actually stop and think about the world, it can be empty. It can be meaningless if we don't have anyone above the world, which is what Peter talks about in terms of Christ. And therefore, in this world, as we look around us, it doesn't have meaning. And therefore, it can be and should be seen as strange as we go about our day-to-day lives. If all we have to do is to live without any reference to God, then that in itself is going to be leaving us in a sense of emptiness and a sense of strangeness, unfulfilled. So Peter talks about these various different characteristics and this lack of hope that we have, but he goes on in the passage and says that that's not the state, obviously, that we were left in. And he goes on and talks about the fact that there is a rescuer. God has sent a rescuer to us. He didn't leave us in that state. And the first aspect of the rescuer of the world that I want to just draw out is the fact that the rescuer is described in verse 23 of this passage as being the living and enduring word of God. It picks up elsewhere in terms of this reference to Jesus being the fact that he was a lamb without blemish or defect there in verse 19. And also in verse 14 and 15, the fact that the lamb, that perfect and unblemished lamb, was holy. And that's effectively the heart of this passage, where God calls us to holiness, to shun the strangeness of the world and the fact that it is temporary, that it is meaningless ultimately, but to focus on Him who has been sent to us, who is holy, spotless, without blemish, and who is the enduring Word of God. But Peter doesn't just talk about the fact that Jesus is holy. We may well just simply state that and believe that to be true. But Peter unpacks that a little bit more, and he mentions the fact that in verse 20, He, that's the Word, the enduring Word, or Jesus as we know Him, was chosen before the creation of the world. And that, again, is something which should give us great comfort, on the basis that if the world is strange, if the world is meaningless in terms of what it can offer us, then actually the fact that God has given us someone who is outside of the world, outside of the time continuum, should give us great hope and great reassurance. And the fact that He was chosen before the world's creation means that also it's no coincidence or no accident that God has provided us with this rescuer. And the obvious passage that sort of comes to mind on that is if we flick back to John chapter 1, where we have the famous verses about the Word, that living and enduring Word being there before the creation of the world. And in John chapter 1, verse 1, it says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through Him all things were made. Without Him nothing was made that has been made. In Him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it." Again, that passage right there in John talks about the fact that the world, as we looked at just a minute ago, is in ignorance. It is in darkness, but Jesus has been sent into the world, sent in to bring light in the darkness, and to give us that hope that that Jesus brings. And that is no accident, that is no coincidence, and that is something which we can rely on. And he goes back, goes on in Peter to talk about the fact that not only is the world living and enduring, not only was the world chosen before the creation of the world, not only is the world holy, spotless, and without blemish, but it says at the end of verse 25 there, that the word of the Lord stands forever. Now, if that isn't a sure foundation for us, in the sense that the world is temporary, that the world is meaningless, then the fact that the world was chosen before the world began and stands forever, if that doesn't give us hope and a strong foundation for how we live our lives, then I don't know what is. But Peter here just reminds us that both past, present, and future, Jesus is the living and enduring Word who we can rely on. And so having established that fact, Peter goes on and says that because of that, we can be redeemed, we can be born again, we can be moved from the state that we were in before, that sense of transient, that ignorance, that way of living which we may well have lived in and we may well not want to live in. We have actually been given the opportunity through what the living and enduring Word has done to have that changed spirit. Peter talks about the fact that the Word, the Gospel, has been preached to us, again at the end of verse 25. So we have no excuse now to be ignorant as the world is. We have the light that Jesus brings to rely on. And through that preaching, we are therefore able to believe, not through the preaching itself, but because of relying on what He's done, because of the fact that He has died, and He has, as it talks about in verse 19, had His precious blood sprinkled over us. We are relying on that, and it's because of the fact that He has given us that hope, that we are therefore given that foundation to be able to live in that holiness that Peter calls us to in verse 16. The fact that Jesus is our Redeemer, we have been born again, gives us that hope and expectation that we can live forevermore in holiness with Him. So, having established that the world is ignorant, having established that the world is not something that we may want to rely on and live in, God sent His Son, that enduring Word, to give us that hope of redemption. And therefore, it's in that sense that Peter says that we should live our lives as strangers. We're to live our lives as strangers, and live our lives as strangers because we are called to be different. So it's us that is to be strangers in this world. The world may well be strange, but we are called to change and be different from the world around us, and therefore be strange to it. And there are two different aspects that in that holiness that we've been called to, that strange set of beliefs that we perhaps rely on, well, not the strange set of beliefs, but the fact that we are strangers because of our beliefs in the world. There are two different aspects of that that Peter relies on. The first is that having been called to change, we have been changed. And that's the first point that he brings out in verse 22, where he says, "Now that you have been purified, now that you have purified yourselves by obeying the truth, we are to love one another." Our hope and our holiness has already happened. We have already received that hope and that holiness. It's past tense when Peter talks there about being purified. We are already holy. We are already living in this world in holiness. And that, again, is something that we can really rely on. But it's not because of ourselves. It does talk in verse 22 about that we have purified ourselves. But it's not that we have purified ourselves as if we've done something. But it's because of the work of the Spirit, and that's one of the reasons why I read back in the start of chapter 1, the beginning, where it talks about the fact that the sanctification or the holiness that has happened is as a result of the work of the Spirit there in verse 2. It says that the sanctifying work of the Spirit has called us to obedience. So it's not because of what we've done, even though we are holy in God's sight in terms of purification. But also we're called to be strangers in this world, and continue to be strangers in this world, to continue to strive for holiness. And that's picked up in various different passages within this. It talks, doesn't it, in verse 14 and 15 about not conforming to the world around us. That's an ongoing, a present tense and a future tense, not conforming and being holy. We're called not just to rely on one event that has happened when we initially trust in God, but we are called to continue to strive for holiness. And the reason in verse 17 is the fact that we are living for a Father who continues to discipline us, who continues to ultimately work through us. And the reason for that is that we are ultimately going to sit under His judgment. Not that He's going to judge us unfairly. It talks in verse 17 about the fact that He will judge us impartially. But because of that, we need to live our lives as holiness, in holiness, recognizing that we are children under a Father. And we're to do that, it says, in reverent fear. And often that word fear is something which we don't necessarily see as positive. Fear is a negative word, isn't it? But in the Bible, and when it's being talked about here in verse 17, it's meant in the positive sense. It's an attitude that we should have, reverent fear. And in terms of an explanation of that, that's picked up in Proverbs chapter 1, where it talks about the fact that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. Only if we have fear of who God is, only if we recognize that God is above the world, is outside the world in terms of time and space, only if we have that right sense of understanding of who He is and His magnificence and His awesomeness, understanding that He is the judge outside of the temporary nature of this world, that we will then have fear, and that fear will drive us to a knowledge and a saving knowledge of Him. And in that sense, it goes on in verse, as I said, in Proverbs chapter 1, that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and if we ignore that, we despise its wisdom, and we despise the discipline that comes with it. And therefore, that sense of fear being the start of knowledge, needing to be accompanied by us doing something, by us actually living in a way that is different. It is again picked up in Proverbs when it says that we should discipline ourselves, or here in Peter where it talks about the fact that we should be obeying the truth. So our holiness isn't something we can just rely on once, but we need to continue to seek to be holy. We need to continue to seek His face and to continue to seek to obey His commands, because only when we continue to seek to obey His commands will we truly understand the fullness and the greatness of what God has done and is continuing to do in us. So we do have that past sense in sense that we do have holiness given to us by what God has done for us. But we shouldn't just rest on that. We should continue to strive to seek to obey Him in reverent fear. And so, as we sort of come to how that applies to our lives, we should live that sense of holiness we've talked about. But if we pick up on some of what we looked at in terms of the world before, where its characteristics had malice, had envy, had hypocrisy, where it was ignorant of the things around us, what's the contrast that we should be demonstrating? Again, picking up on what Steve was talking about last week, about the fact that as Christians we are to live a life which is different from those around us. So Peter goes on and talks about the characteristics that we might have, or that we should have, in terms of being strangers in this world, relying on that holiness. And the characteristics he pulls out are up there. He says that our minds should be ready for action. Which, when I was thinking about it, was a slightly odd phrase when I was trying to grapple with, in the sense that I don't often think of my mind being ready for action. Action is much more of a physical thing. It's not something necessarily which my mind sort of warms up. Andy and I played squash this week, and we had an attempt at warming up beforehand in order not to pull a muscle, which someone might have done 2 weeks ago when they played squash. So we are to warm up our bodies for action often, but we don't often think about warming up our minds in terms of action. And yet Peter calls us in verse 13 to have minds that are prepared for action, to be continually understanding, warm to what God is saying, so that we can live our lives according to the holiness to which we have been called for. We're called to be self-controlled. And again, that perhaps picks up and counterbalances some of the attributes or the characteristics of the world that we read at the start of chapter 2 about malice and deceit, hypocrisy, envy and slander. We're called to be self-controlled. Those attributes of the world that Peter talks about are often sort of bubbling up from within us, and are elements of demonstrate a lack of self-control in many different circumstances. And so Peter says that rather than living like that, we're to live self-controlled lives. We're to live self-controlled lives in the hope that is in Christ, and there are various phrases throughout this passage about hope being something that we should look to, and we should be looking to the future in. Peter talks about the fact that we should have faith in God. Again, not just looking forward, but living day to day with the faith that we are living in God, who has forgiven us, who has given us the holiness, but who continually needs to be working in us, and we rely on Him. That's what the faith in God is talking about, where we continue to rely, living our lives day to day on Him and His work in us through the Spirit. And he goes on and talks in verse 22 about the fact that our characteristics should also be loving. Not just loving towards God, although that is part of it, but loving more particularly to the brothers. It talks in verse 22. Not just loving the brothers in a sort of a gentle, sort of fairly light touch way, but loving one another deeply from the heart. It should move us in terms of how we live out our lives in holiness to actually want to really get alongside people, to really understand what people's lives involve and how we can support and encourage and help them. And that's very much what Peter goes on and talked about in verse 2, and what Steve picked up last week in terms of, as a fellowship, as a church, we're to come together and to really love each other deeply. And that's built on what Peter's talking about here, about the fact that our love for one another is driven out of the fact that we have been called to holiness. We have been called to live as strangers in this world, as individuals, but also taking the support and encouragement from one another, which is why we're to obey the truth and to obey the truth with sincere love for one another. But we're not going to do that by ourselves in terms of having just that holiness imparted to us in one go, as I said. How we are to live an ongoing life of holiness is by continuing to search out its many different truths. And so it goes on chapter 2 and verse 2 to talk about the fact that we should crave spiritual milk, that we should crave more and more of the knowledge of God, linking back to what it said there in Proverbs chapter 1, when it talked about the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. We should continue to seek to know him more, to learn more about what he has done for us, and to learn more about how we should live. And we should do that in that sense, and that spirit of community, in that spirit of church, as we were looking at before. Now, a number of those things are themes which continually run through the Bible. In fact, they're all themes that run through the Bible, but those middle ones there of hope, faith and love are picked up, aren't they, in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 13, where often a passage read at weddings, indeed it was read at our wedding, in terms of what Paul talks about in terms of how we should live. And verse 13 of 1 Corinthians 13 says, "Now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love." And it's that greatest of these is love that we need to continually have as our spirit and as our characteristic, as we seek to love God, and therefore in loving him, seeking to be holy, because that's what pleases our Father, who is ultimately going to judge us. And it's that sense of loving one another as we not just live personally focused on God, but as we live corporately, loving one another. Faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. That's the attitude, that's the nature that we should be living, and that's the foundation that we should be living as a church in these days, as we're called to be strangers, as we're called to apply some of these teachings to our day-to-day lives. So, if we're called to be strangers in this world, that does cause us to question, well, if we're strangers in this world, where perhaps are we not strangers? And that's where Peter finishes off, and that's where we're going to finish off as well. We're not called to just be strange. We may well just be strange, but we're not called just to be strange. We are called to be children of God. God is our Father. Yes, he is a judge, but he is our Father. We are called to act as children and to be as children. And that's not just any children, but cherished children. Children of a different world. Because just like the world's inheritance is emptiness, just like it is perishable and it is temporary and it is meaningless ultimately, our inheritance is elsewhere. We are children of a different world. And Peter finishes off this chapter by talking about the fact that having had that spiritual milk, or craving that spiritual milk, we're craving it, we're craving that knowledge, that holiness, in order that we may grow up in our salvation. We have been saved. Peter makes that quite clear. But we are to continue to grow in that salvation. We are continuing to continue to experience that salvation and understand that salvation more and more. And that's why we're to crave spiritual milk, to grow up in that salvation. It's not fully realized. So whilst we are saved, the experience of being saved is something which we only see in part now. And that's, again, perhaps the phraseology at the end there of the passage we're looking at in verse 3 of chapter 2, where we are sat at God's, sit at God's eternal banqueting table. For the moment, Peter says, we have just tasted that the Lord is good. Now, when I say just tasted that the Lord is good, that doesn't mean to minimize that or to diminish that, because the Lord is good and to taste him is great. But the phrase "tasted that the Lord is good," to my mind, implies that that's just a little teaser almost of what is to come. If we are to truly understand the greatness and the goodness of God and to truly experience it, we're not just going to taste it, but we're going to revel in the banquet, the food that God has given us. And that comes when we are with him in heaven, sat at his eternal banquet. We might suffer now, we might go through trials and tribulations, but we are called to inheritance which gives us that hope of that eternal banquet. And there is so much more to come. And in terms of the fact that we might not see it fully now, we might only be tasting and getting a foretaste of what's to come. Again, in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, just before the passage we read before, Paul talks about the fact that at the moment we see just a poor reflection in the mirror. But when Christ comes, then we shall see face to face. We will know him fully. And it's in that sense that we're just tasting now. We're just getting that little bit of a teaser of what heaven is going to be like. We are just beginning to understand what our salvation means. Because for now, we see just a poor reflection. But when Christ comes, we will witness the fullness of his grace, as it talks about in verse 13 of 1 Peter chapter 1. We are going to experience the fullness of his grace, and that's why we're called to be self-controlled. That's why we're called to be holy. In heaven, we will know his grace completely. But we'll know his grace completely, as I said, in heaven. And we're not living in heaven at the moment, and that's why we're strangers in this world. And we will only know that fullness when Christ is revealed. It says that the grace will be fully known to us, in verse 13, when Jesus Christ is revealed. And therefore we're to fix our eyes on him, it says elsewhere in the Bible. To fix our eyes on that hope that is Jesus, that he is coming again. That yes, he has died. Yes, his blood has been sprinkled. And we'll come and we'll celebrate that in a minute through communion. The fact that he has died for us, that he has been sacrificed, that having been chosen before the world began to rescue us, that has happened. But he is coming again. And when he comes again, that's when the fullness of his grace will be revealed. So we are to fix our eyes and our hope on the fact that that is when we will know completely the world where we will not be strangers, where we will not be struggling to live. And that is the hope that we should have. That is why we're called to be holy, and that is when we will be holy. For in heaven there is no sin, there is no blemish. In that sense, and when we get there, when we will truly be holy. We're called to holiness now, but in heaven we will be holy. And when we're in heaven, then we'll be praising and glorifying and honouring him. For he will be revealed day by day for eternity. And that is the hope that we have. That is the holiness that we seek to live our lives so that we can get there. And it's in that sense that, as Steve was talking about last week, as a church, we're to come together, we're to support each other and to encourage each other to really focus on holiness in our personal lives and in our church life, so that we can ultimately all seek to glorify him, honour him when he is revealed and we are in heaven. And that is what we're going to go on and look forward to, because of what he's done in communion.